Good morning, good morning. Have you ever gotten up first thing in the morning and felt that it's just great to be alive, that every breath is a gift of sweet life from above?
Well, even if you don't see it quite that cheerily, it is great to have you aboard here at the Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVA. Philip J., look who's back in studio.
Yes, welcome back, Mark Christopher, radio legend.
If I started my morning like that, Karen would have me out with the trash cans right now, you guys. It's just something else.
Say, simmer down.
Back. Good to be back from the snow countries of Hood Canal, and boy, was it a scattered time. And
I was going to say, it didn't sound like an easy drive in for you this morning to get from...
It was a challenge, and I'm a snowbird like you, Phil. Uh-huh. You know, all the years I've been driving, and even Karen just about 20 minutes ago says, well, we got snow coming down again. Whew. It was 31 when I left the house. John, as I shared with you and Phil, I sent you a text. There were two motorcycles on the highway. I was dealing with black ice and then fog, and then all of a sudden you get a section of road for a couple of miles where it's that frost and the tire tracks. Yeah. So you can't hit the brakes. You got to take it easy. But, you know, roads of 50, 55, you're best at maybe 35 and 40. And for a 29-mile drive to get to a ferry, it was, you know, white knuckles at time, and I'm experienced. Great job to places like Belfair and Allen, all the small communities. De-icer, roads are clear. It's the offbeat roads, the secret roads that some of us take. Those are going to be the challenge this morning until we get to daylight. If you don't need to be out there, John, especially on the peninsula, stay at home. It's bad.
Well, I will tell you this. I cannot believe there were motorcycles out there.
I saw one yesterday as I was driving in on Lake City Way.
I have been in the snow on a motorcycle once. Just once. Once was enough. You got an 800-pound motorcycle. You still only have two tires, okay? And it's not like they have chains for motorcycle tires, okay? So you don't have much grip. So if you're riding around in snow, you're going to have a very tough time keeping the shiny side up.
Hey, you just can't see it. And the other thing, too, John, we're wimpy drivers, if you ask anybody around the country when it comes to snow. No, we are not. Here's the problem. A half inch of snow, get a little ice and frost with all these hills around the city, you're a fool to try to come down or even go up, with four-wheel drive. You got to grip something. You can't grip on ice with four-wheel drive.
So I will tell you all this as we get ready to roll here on the Commute with Carlson. It was a little slippier. It was slippery and a little tougher to grab the road today when I drove than it was yesterday when there was actually snow on the ground. So, at least for a while. So... The water has frozen, and so the road conditions, you know, you say, oh, good, you know, it's bare pavement now. I don't have to worry. I think you're going to find it's a little more slick out there than it might appear.
Yeah, well, wait for a couple hours.
So in other words, just be careful.
Wait for a couple hours. We're going to get some sunshine after a bit here to enjoy the day, but stay put.
Otherwise, you can always just listen to the John Carlson Show. That's a good excuse. What boss is going to, you know, say, well, you're late. Why are you late? I was listening to the John Carlson Show. Oh, well, all right.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. But anyway, like I said, just if you're commuting, it's a little extra measure of caution on the road. I think you'll find that it's a little slick, but very navigable in most places. All right. Okay. Boy, do we have a lot of things we want to talk about today. There is a bill in Olympia that would require you to get a permit to purchase a gun. Again, the state and federal constitutions say that owning a firearm is a constitutional right. And yet, in the state of Washington, this bill would require you to get a permit to buy one. Since when do you need a permit to exercise a constitutional right? This is the signature item in the Alliance for Gun Responsibilities policy agenda for this year. And we're going to talk to the head of the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, Renee Hopkins, is going to be with us at 8:05 this morning. That should be a good conversation. I love this controversy over USAID, the Agency for International Development. I know a guy who, during the Reagan years, was one of the top officials in that agency. And all I can tell you is, boy, has that agency changed over the years. And that's one of the reasons that all this controversy. And the reason why all these Democrats are meeting and rallying in front of USAID headquarters is they're recognizing that a very big slush fund is in the process of being shut down. We will talk about that momentarily. We'll also be talking later this hour about this 35-year-old man. You heard over the weekend that he was shot and killed while confronting car thieves, tried to prevent them from stealing his car in Renton. His name is Mark Falealia. Is that do I get that right, Philip J? Falealia?
I don't have it in front of me, but Falealii, I think.
Falealii?
Falealii.
Falealii?
That's the last name for that family.
Samoan married father of two. Was dragged a short distance and then shot and killed as he was trying to stop his car from being stolen. We will have a little more information about this guy, and it's just enraging as, once again, we see the randomness of violence. You know, people are going to say, gee, should he have confronted them over a car? He got himself shot. The other thing to say is, why would people stealing a car be shooting and killing someone who's simply trying to get his car back? Why wouldn't you, you know, drive it a couple miles, you know, get him out off the car, drive a couple miles and just ditch the car? But authorities are looking for these guys. I have a feeling they know who they're looking for, or have an idea of who they're looking for. And we will talk about that in more detail coming up. The president of El Salvador, who is very popular in his country because he made it safe again. El Salvador used to be the most dangerous country in Central America. Now it's one of the safest. And its president says that if countries won't take their criminal, illegal aliens back from our country to back to their country, he said, we'll take them. We'll take them. We'll arrange a fee that will be much, much less than what it costs in the United States, but it will help us. We can incarcerate them for a whole lot less money than in the United States. So if you have criminal illegals and you want them out of your country, we will take them. And it'll help make our prison system more sustaining because we've made lots of room for bad guys in our country. A little more on that coming up here on The Commute with Carlson. I do want to start, looks like, Joe Kent has found himself a job. Joe Kent, you'll recall, has run for Congress twice in Southwest Washington, the 3rd Congressional District. He lost narrowly in 2022 after defeating an incumbent Republican congresswoman. Remember Jamie Herrera Butler? He defeated her, and then he went on to lose in the general election to a Democrat, the small business owner named Marie Glusenkamp Perez. It is one of the few districts that Donald Trump won that a Democrat also won. And it was thought, well, when the Trump voters come out in 2024, she'll lose. Joe Kent won the primary, earned a rematch with Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, ran a much better race, and had a much more unified party behind him, still lost. Again, it was close, but Donald Trump won the district and he lost. So now Donald Trump is reaching down and giving a hand to Joe Kent and has named him to be the director of the National Counterterrorism Center. The Counterterrorism Center coordinates the country's strategy against terrorism. Also, that's the place that maintains the database of suspected terrorists. It operates in partnership with the CIA, the FBI, and the Defense Department. And he will need Senate confirmation. Now, you probably know already that Joe Kent is a decorated soldier. A Green Beret. A former CIA officer. Quote, Joe has hunted down terrorists and criminals his entire adult life, wrote President Trump in announcing his appointment of Joe Kent to head the Counterterrorism Center. Not only that, but his wife, who served with him in the armed forces, she was a Navy cryptologist. She was killed by terrorists in Syria. That happened 5 years ago. So, again, back to Trump. Joe continues to honor her legacy by staying in the fight. Joe will help us keep America safe by eradicating all terrorism from the jihadists around the world to the cartels in our backyard, close quote. So, this is good news. Joe Kent, again, has a sterling resume, but he also, you know, is very new to politics, was sometimes making needlessly antagonistic, divisive statements that kind of came back and hurt him. And that might be why a district, a Republican district, that even Donald Trump has won twice, why they didn't go for Joe. Now, I think Joe Kent's got great potential. He's just a wonderful guy. And I would like to see him build a career. So this is actually a good move. What it does, it helps him regroup. It helps him develop a resume in a very high-profile role and can really help grow his career. Maybe it will be an appointed office. Maybe he'll develop his credentials and will run again for elective office. I don't know. But I do know that it will be good to have someone like that with his resume, his background, and someone who knows what it's like to lose someone to terrorism. It'll be good to have him in that office. All right. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. By the way, our good friend Brian Haywood be stopping by. You know, there is a bill in Olympia that is designed to cripple the initiative process. Now, we've seen the initiative process used to support path-breaking legislation on the right and path-breaking legislation on the left. You know, the initiative process gave us three strikes, you're out. Gave us spending limits on government. It also gave Washington State abortion rights and a higher minimum wage. I mean, it's been used by both sides. But now, with the Democrats dominating in the state capitol, the initiative process is kind of a nuisance to them. So they have been trying for several sessions now to trim, to clip, to restrict the abortion, or excuse me, the abortion, the initiative process. And there's another bill this session that is, once again, designed to invalidate and needlessly complicate the initiative process. Brian Haywood knows what they're up to. He will be joining us at 7:35. Plus, he's going to tell us more about what I think is one of the best media sites out there, particularly if you're from Washington State. It's called Haywire, haywire.org, H-E-Y, haywire.org. It is set up to let people throughout Washington State, not just the Puget Sound region, all throughout Washington, know what's going on in the news media. It gathers stories that are appearing on radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, blog posts, and posts those stories. And then, if you keep scrolling down, it offers 50 different media sites for people to check out. And one of them, what do you know, is the John Carlson Show. So check it out before he gets here, and then we'll talk about it with him as well during our conversation. Haywire with an E, haywire.org. All right. It's a busy program. It's 6:20 in the morning. Philip J. Vandervoort III is right around the corner with a social media sweep. Great having you aboard as the Commute with Carlson is underway. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, I said it was very important that we send Joe Kent to Washington last fall. What do you know? He's going to Washington. So this is a little different assignment here. Welcome back, everyone. The Commute with Carlson, 23 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock. By the way, we'll try and get to this story as well. The University of California has been sued for discriminating against whites and Asians. Apparently, they didn't get the memo from the Supreme Court. You can't do that anymore. You shouldn't have been able to do it, period. But that lawsuit was filed yesterday. We'll try and get you the details of that. Right now, Philip J. Vandervoort III's got the details on what's going on in the social media world with the social media sweep.
Yeah, let's kind of get some news going here as it pertains to the morning commute. We know it's slippery and icy in a lot of places, but there's a bad crash northbound 405. Uh-oh. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. This is in the Renton area near Highway 169, the exit to Maple Valley Highway, and
oh, yeah.
The state DOT on social media posted this here just before the top of the hour, so about 30-35 minutes ago. Back up from the crash blocking all lanes of northbound I-405 at Highway 169. It now extends 2 miles south onto northbound Highway 167. So if you're coming up through the valley, and 405 from I-5 is also a part of this where the backup is so substantial. No estimate when the crash will clear. Continue to use alternative routes. So if you've got to get to the east side, man, Highway 18 maybe, but that's probably going to be tricky because that's probably going to be a little bit more cold, slippery, and icy than, say, I-5 would be.
Anyone hurt?
But otherwise, I just know that one of the lanes are blocked. So I don't know if they've talked about any injuries so far, but man, otherwise, you're probably going to want to go all the way up to I-90 at I-5 in Seattle as an alternative and then go across the bridge to the east side. So you've got some stories about this United States Agency for International Development, USAID.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes.
I noticed a couple of items about this. One, the State Department's own statement on this. They write that USAID has long strayed from its original mission of responsibly advancing American interests abroad. Now abundantly clear that significant portions of USAID funding are not aligned with core national interests of the United States.
Or any national interest of the United States.
One fiscal conservative that I follow on social media named Sunny Johnson, she writes, "They tell you to hate everything America does around the world. Then they fight to protect the funding for USAID for all the bleep America does around the world. Do you see the conflict and the problem?" pretty good summary right there.
Yeah.
In Seattle, the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, has been working on some of these ICE arrest plans. And the DEA Seattle posted this. The DEA, along with our Department of Justice partners, like ICE, continues to assist Department of Homeland Security with the immigration enforcement efforts. And then they say that they've got a rape suspect that they have taken into custody in Seattle. So there's another example of some of the criminal illegal alien arrests that have been going on in and around Seattle.
So this is just another Trump ICE raid?
Right. Now, these agencies are kind of working in conjunction.
Okay.
So some of them, if it's, you know, drug trafficking related, that's probably why the DEA is getting involved. And then, of course, you've got Department of Homeland Security that's involved, Department of Justice that's involved. And then you have the ICE element as well for criminal illegal aliens. And then continuing along, Black History Month. Today is a pretty significant day in American and Black history. Born on this day in 1913. Want to take a guess on a possible name?
Born in 1913?
1913.
Yeah.
Made news in 1955. Rosa Parks.
Oh.
Born on this day in 1913. Yes. Here's another name for everybody to know. Yesterday, I told you about the U.S. history and Black history of Daniel Hale Williams, the man first credited with a successful heart surgery.
Doctor.
Dr. Daniel Hale Williams. Here's another one to know. An inventor, Elijah McCoy. And it was in 1872 when he had a patent approved let me pull it up here. I'm on the wrong page. That's why I can't pull it up here. Had a patent approved for it's called a lubricating cap that became known as the Real McCoy. It applied oil to the moving parts of steam engines back in 1872. The device was widely adopted by railroads and other industries that used large machinery. Railroad engineers preferred McCoy's device over similar inventions. And that is how we got the phrase, the Real McCoy.
Oh, no way.
Right?
That's the origin of that expression.
That's the origin of that phrase, the Real McCoy.
I always used oil can Henry. Who was Henry?
So
that's good.
Other inventions that he made, a graphite lubricator for a superheated machinery, a movable ironing board, a lawn sprinkler was another item that he invented. He has over 57 patents. He is a member of the National Inventors Hall of Fame. Elijah McCoy, thank you for doing what you did.
Thank you, Elijah McCoy. All right. It is coming up on 6:29 and a half. Before we break here, thank you for mentioning Rosa Parks. Again, 1955 helped ignite the modern civil rights movement by refusing to give up her seat on a bus in Birmingham, Alabama, and Montgomery, and started the Montgomery school, or the Montgomery bus boycott that was led by a local preacher, Dexter Avenue Church, named Martin Luther King. She eventually moved from Alabama to Detroit, and got a job in a local congressman's office as, I think, office manager or receptionist. And she was viciously attacked by a drugged-out, strung-out guy in her own home. She got beaten very badly. So she was threatened, but never, but managed, when she left Alabama, to have not been, you know, injured or otherwise harmed. But she goes to Detroit, and she almost lost her life there. But she recovered and lived to very ripe old age and made history. Schools named after her across the country. Rosa Parks, happy birthday. And thank you for what you did. It is coming up on 31 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock. When we come back, all this commotion, all this bedlam over the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, we'll tell you what it's all about right after this. All right, be careful out there on the roads. A little slick, a little, lot of black ice out there.
Just 405 there careful. At Maple Valley Highway, John, just a mess. Northbound, stay away from that area.
So... if you know of a traffic tie-up you want our listeners to know about that you haven't yet heard on the radio, that northbound 405?
Northbound right now.
Northbound is just the latest. If there's a traffic tie-up you know about that you haven't, that others may not know about, hasn't been widely publicized, let us know. Text us, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. And we will pass that information along. So the U.S. Agency for International Development, it used to be, it used to be an agency that focused on aid to overseas countries in an effort to build up their middle class and help plant the seeds of free enterprise and democratic reforms. It would also get relief to people who were suffering from famine, suffering from weather events, etc. Okay, that's what it's supposed to be doing. It hadn't been doing that as much. And that is why so much controversy. Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa said that leaders at USAID have blocked and even threatened her when she tried to oversee how they distribute their money. She says that the funds that are appropriated by Congress don't often go toward their intended purposes. And there has actually been an investigation that was launched into their activities. So USAID has been a problem for a while. She said, we know in the example of Ukraine is the humanitarian aid wasn't getting distributed to humanitarian aid contractors. It was just being sent to the United Nations. We have no idea where that money is going from that point forward. So we tried to call the question on USAID, and again, they threatened us. They stonewalled us. And even after I joined forces with Congressman Mike McCaul to announce a formal investigation of the agency, they still slow-walked providing any data to us. So this is the agency that Elon Musk confronted. And Donald Trump said, hey, if you need to shut this place down in order to audit it, then shut this place down to audit it. Patty Murray says she, Senator Patty Murray from Washington here, says we're pursuing every action that we can do. We are here to pull the fire alarm. We are pulling the fire alarm, close quote. No, you're not pulling the fire alarm. You're trying to help continue obstructing the auditing of this broken federal agency that's operating as a slush fund for politically favored organizations. So here is how they are now spending. Here's how they have been spending taxpayer money at USAID. This is White House spokeswoman Carolyn Leavitt.
through USAID over the past several years, these are some of the insane priorities that that organization has been spending money on. $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia's workplaces, $70,000 for a production of a DEI musical in Ireland, $47,000 for a transgender opera in Colombia, $32,000 for a transgender comic book in Peru. I don't know about you, but as an American taxpayer, I don't want my dollars going towards this crap, and I know the American people don't either, and that's exactly what Elon Musk has been tasked by President Trump to do, to get the fraud, waste, and abuse out of our federal government. Thank you, guys.
And Elon Musk and his people run into the same kind of obstruction that Senator Ernst was. So Elon Musk says, you know what? This place, they're resisting an audit. Just shut it down. And it's not being shut down, but it is, you know, they have hit the pause button on their activities. Because they're a whole slew, a whole phalanx of their leadership was trying to obstruct an audit of an agency that somehow thinks it's beyond being audited and certainly beyond accountability. Anyway, the new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, former senator from Florida, lays out what is wrong with U.S. aid. And again, he makes it clear, like Senator Ernst, this has been an ongoing problem.
Look, I mean, my frustration with USAID goes back to my time in Congress.
There's some ambient noise as he's speaking to reporters, but he says, my frustration with USAID goes back to my days in Congress. Let's continue.
It's a completely unresponsive agency. It's supposed to respond to policy directives of the State Department, and it refuses to do so. So the functions of USAID, there are a lot of functions of USAID that are going to continue, that are going to be part of American foreign policy, but it has to be aligned with American foreign policy. I said very clearly during my confirmation hearing that every dollar we spend and every program we fund, that will be aligned with the national interest of the United States. And USAID has a history of sort of ignoring that and deciding that they're somehow a global charity separate from the national interest. These are taxpayer dollars. And so I'm very troubled by these reports that they've been unwilling to cooperate with people who are asking simple questions about what does this program do, who gets the money, who are our contractors, who's funded. And that sort of level of insubordination makes it impossible to conduct the sort of mature and serious review that I think foreign aid writ large should have. We're spending taxpayer money here. These are not donor dollars. These are taxpayer dollars. And we owe the American people the assurances that every dollar we are spending abroad is being spent on something that furthers our national interests. And so far, a lot of the people that work at USAID have just simply refused to cooperate.
Again, there you go. They are refusing to cooperate at USAID. They have had this attitude for a while. We'll do what we want. They seem to think that they are above having to serve the U.S. security interests, U.S. interests around the world. And they seem to think that they shouldn't have to answer for what they do. Again, this is an ongoing problem with USAID. So good for Elon Musk for doing this. And of course, there's Patty Murray trying to, you know, protect USAID's prerogative to fund DEI activities in Serbia and transgender comic books in other countries. It's absolutely absurd what these people are doing, but you know they get a toehold on these organizations, and then they just start harnessing funding for their own purposes. And Donald Trump is there to make sure they understand, and Elon Musk is there to make sure understand. It doesn't work like that anymore. It is a new day. Legally speaking, can Trump do this? Yes, he can. He can hold back the money. Now, there are rules. He can take the money and isolate it. And then he has to inform Congress what he's doing and why. And he has to propose to Congress what instead they do with the appropriation. Now, he's got 45 days to do that. This controversy started a few days ago, so he probably has about 40 days where he has to explain that he's impounding this money. He's not going to spend it until he and Congress can discuss how to get this agency back on track. So good for Elon for doing this. I'm glad they immediately came forward with examples of how they are spending their budget. And I think they need to amplify just how uncooperative that agency has been to being accountable for how they spend their money. So that's what you need to know about USAID that you're probably not going to get from local newspaper or in TV news coverage. Thank goodness you got me. All right. And in a couple of minutes, you also got Lars Larson here, the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning.
But what's snow? What is snow? Does Lars know? I mean, he had like what, an uncle that was in Paint Your Wagon? What is snow? I just got to ask Lars real quick.
My dad was in Paint Your Wagon, I had to listen to that. Well, I mean, look, it's great music, but about the 50th time you've heard it, he loved the music from Paint Your Wagon, but he was in Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah, by the way, are you ready for this? You'll both be impressed with me. I had no idea you were going to be talking about this. No idea.
Nor did I.
Lee Marvin.
What? Yep.
John Carlson knew that Lee Marvin starred in Paint Your Wagon. I have no idea why I know that. I never saw the movie.
John, the female lead. Who is the female lead?
The blonde.
Jean Seberg.
Yeah. Oh,
Clint Eastwood's first movie, he sang a song, I Talked to the Trees.
So what was your dad, by the way?
My dad was a gold miner, and when the scene arrives where there's all these gold miners who haven't seen a woman or a child in, you know, months or years or whatever, and this woman shows up at the camp in a wagon, and she's holding a baby, and he's one of the miners who says, I'll give you, you know, an ounce of gold to hold the baby. And, you know, he's not distinguishable.
Well, was your dad an actor?
That was your dad?
He was a part-time. He was in Red Dawn. He got his SAG card by being machine gunned down for singing badly in Red Dawn.
I had no idea.
He was in Benny and June, which was shot in Spokane. His real name was Waldo. My dad's name was Waldo, and he played the character Waldo in Benny and June with Johnny Depp and I can't remember her name.
Right. Well, from now on, we'll have to call you Hollywood Lars. By the way, real quickly, you have a little bit of context to add to the USAID debate about how this agency has lost its way. It was chartered under President Kennedy?
As an executive order, and it stayed an executive order from 61 to 98, so almost 40 years, and then was finally turned into a piece of legislation in 98. Remember how everybody said Trump can't create the DOGE agency because that takes legislation? Well, John Kennedy created USAID with an executive order, an agency that ended up spending $50 billion a year and was only made a statutory agency in 1998. 37 years after its creation through an executive order.
And how did it begin to think it was impervious to any kind of accountability? Lars is going to talk about that on his program.
Fund transgender opera. You know, that's got that going for them.
That's right. What would we do without that? Thank you very much, Lars Larson, on the John Carlson Show. It's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome. Hour number two. Great to be with you. And I know your commute is probably a little slower in some places, really, really slow. So do be patient, because the road conditions, well, this is one reason for the longer commutes, are a little slick and a little slippery, and some cars are not navigating it all that well, so do be careful.
Yeah, the crash northbound 405 there at Highway 169 for Maple Valley. Apparently the HOV lane is now open, but it's still going to be a grind getting anywhere north on northbound 405 through Renton. Use another way to get around that to get to the east side of Lake Washington.
And if you are aware of any traffic tie-ups that are not getting publicized, let us know. We'll pass it along to your fellow listeners here, okay? How's that sound?
Seattle looks good, by the way, with the heat of the city lights. It's just the outlying areas, slick and cold. Sunshine, though, later in the day here.
Let's keep it local here on the John Carlson Show. An update on a awful story. Saturday, a 35-year-old Renton man shot dead in the middle of the night. He finds out that there are car thieves prowling through his car trying to steal it. And so he runs out and confronts the thieves. And actually, you know, they jump in his car. He holds on to it. And they respond by dragging him. And when he wouldn't fall off, they shot him. They shot and killed him. Como 4 spoke to the dead man's brother. He is married and the father of two.
And my brother ran outside and they got the car up and running. And it started moving and he started chasing the car.
The family of Mark Felali'i is still in shock after losing him in just the blink of an eye. Police say the victim was trying to stop two suspects from stealing his car in the middle of the night in the Victoria Hills neighborhood. He grabbed on through the car window, but was dragged by the suspects, who then fatally shot him as they were driving away.
So I ran up here. Saw police were on already on the scene. I saw somebody that was laying on the ground. I thought it was a stranger.
The oldest brother of six, Felali'i, leaves behind his wife and two young children.
Very caring. He puts other people first, especially my family.
Police later found the suspect vehicle near Cascade Park and the victim's vehicle on the 16,000 block of 132nd Place Southeast, not far from Lindbergh High School. They're asking residents in those areas to check their security cameras from 3:15 to 7:30 a.m. early Saturday morning for anything that might be useful to the investigation. This all comes as Renton police have also been investigating more than 60 car prowls across 8 different locations overnight January 25th, where a group of 3 to 4 suspects stole 4 guns. No suspects have been arrested in those incidents, and police say it's too early to tell if the same suspects are responsible.
Though it would be good to know where they got their gun.
And are we going to find out that whoever might be arrested for this, this is their first foray into the criminal activity?
I don't think so.
Going to guess that.
60 prowls, as we shared, a weekend ago. Then we had 5 of these car thefts over the weekend, one of which was this gentleman who was shot. It was a Kia Sorento. Seems to still be the target favorite vehicle.
Yeah. And so, boy, I hope they get these guys. I really hope they get these guys. And what we're going to learn, they have long criminal records, and they just kept recycling through the system, because we really don't deter crime by punishing criminals very much anymore.
Are we all running into friends, family, and neighbors? You ask them, what have you got in your car nowadays? People are saying bear spray. Some say a firearm. They have a permit, John. Mm-hmm. A club, a tire iron. Some kind of a weapon, just a deterrent. We never, ever had this kind of a situation where everybody's got something in the car in case something of a theft happens.
So again, I really, really hope the next update we have for you, they've got these guys in custody. I'm just getting so tired of these crimes because, again, you know, when the Ways and Means Committee in Olympia mess up, okay, your taxes might go up. When the Transportation Committee doesn't do its job, well, you know, maybe your commutes are longer. But when the Law and Justice or Judiciary Committees don't do their jobs in Olympia, you know, people die. And, you know, Olympia is boasting, inside Olympia, progressives are boasting of the fact that almost one-third of our jails are empty. And almost two-thirds of the youth center, the still relatively new youth center in King County, is empty. Two-thirds of it empty. While we have all this rampant crime going on. So in about 50 minutes, we're going to be having a conversation with with Renee Hopkins. Renee is the head of Alliance for Gun Responsibility. And she thinks that one of the answers to gun violence is to make it harder for people to buy a gun in the first place. I am guessing that almost all of the stories that we're talking about relating to crime are people committing crimes with stolen guns, and these people have no or purchased from people who stole them, and they have no legal right to carry a firearm because they're felons. So I don't know how we are helping the problem by going after law-abiding people. You are listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Okay, let's take it national for a moment. Again, we were talking about USAID in the previous segment of the previous hour, where an agency that has long since untethered itself to congressional accountability or responsibility doesn't answer for what it does. And when they are asked, they stiff arm members of Congress who appropriate their money. Just to let you know how crazy things got at USAID, USAID, the Agency for International Development, $520 million was spent by USAID on ESG consultants. Over $370 million was awarded in DEI, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion grants abroad. Another $1.2 billion was given to undisclosed recipients, air quotes. This is the progressive swamp using your money to give to their friends. Okay? And what do you want to bet? That people who run these organizations are probably turning around and donating money to Democrats to keep that money coming to them. To say that this has nothing to do, these grants, ESG grants, DEI grants, has nothing to do with international development. Supposed to be helping to build their economies and build the infrastructure of their societies, it's obvious that what they're doing in many cases has little to nothing to do with international development. It has to do with funding left-wing activities all around the world with your money. And when your members of Congress ask for details, they are told, sorry, can't help you with that. Or they give them purposely vague, opaque, or misleading information. So, again, just so you know why they selected this particular agency. There are some agencies in D.C. that are just completely out of control. Just completely unhinged from congressional oversight and responsibility. By the way, while we are talking about the Trump administration, did I call this one right or did I call this one right? What did I tell you yesterday? That all this sound and fury about Donald Trump imposing these tariffs on Canada, Mexico, the stock market lost many, you know, I think it was 800 points or something like that.
Yeah, then it came back like late in the day, John.
And we'll get into why in a moment. And, you know, Donald Trump is going to provoke a recession. Donald Trump is going to cause economic pain to American consumers. All this.
And, John, real quick on the election thing. This was just like yesterday. All the families calling me and they're all on both sides like, what do you think, Mark? Oh, we can't talk about this in the family. We're going to get in fights and arguments like we did with the election. That's what I went through.
And I said, hey, at the end of the day, there aren't going to be any tariffs, but you are going to see Mexico and Canada agree to do more to fortify, protect, and secure the U.S. border. What happened? Canada and Mexico both agreed, independent of each other, to the requests made of them by the administration. 10,000 troops south of the border, Mexican troops south of the border, 10,000 Canadian troops north of the border, and no tariffs on anyone. I told you this would happen. So we end up with no tariffs, a booming stock market to compensate for the loss, kind of that's the stock market expressing the sigh of relief. And all the concerns about what this would do to the economy are, you know, we did not see any of that happen. So this is how you use tariffs. Not as an economic policy, but as a political tactic. And Trump did it well.
Business deals, John.
Yeah, or as a friend of mine put it, the art of the deal. Okay. What I did not predict is what just went down in El Salvador. Did you hear this? The president of El Salvador, relatively young man, Nayib Bukele, met with Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio is taking an extended trip throughout Latin America to shore up support for the administration's agenda tackling illegal immigration. We had success in, of all places, Venezuela, which is a would-be Cuba, but it's not quite working out that way, an anti-American regime, but they agreed that they would take all the illegals who have committed crimes in the United States, they would take them back, and they would fly them on Venezuelan airplanes to have them removed. What happened in El Salvador tops that. El Salvador, which is an ally, President Bukele happens to be a free market reformer who wants to be a friend of the United States. His background is in business. He has offered to incarcerate illegal immigrants in the United States in his country for a, quote, relatively low fee. He said, we have offered the United States of America the opportunity to outsource part of its prison system. We are willing to take in only convicted criminals into our mega prison system in exchange for a fee. The fee would be relatively low for the United States, but significant for us, making our entire prison system sustainable. So if we have illegals who are not on the street but are actually in prison, or if we have illegals that we have swept up that are going to be tried for crimes and then sentenced, he said, we'll take them in El Salvador. And we'll take them for a small fraction of what it would cost to incarcerate them in the United States. That will enable us to pay for our own prison system, because this guy declared war on MS-13. And he cleaned up the streets. Here's what I'm talking about. In less than 3 years' time, El Salvador went from being the most dangerous country in Central America to the safest country in Central America. He declared war on the bad guys, and he is winning. And now he says not only will he take illegals, he says he'll take U.S. convicts who are American citizens. He said, send them to us, too. We'll take them as well. Not sure we can do that, but I like the thought. Marco Rubio's office, Secretary of State, said the meeting was tremendously successful, resulted in multiple agreements that will make both countries, quote, stronger, safer, and more prosperous, close quote. President Bukele agreed to take back all Salvadoran MS-13 gang members who are in the United States unlawfully, Rubio wrote. He also promised to accept and incarcerate violent illegal immigrants, including members of the Venezuelan Trendy Aragua gang, but also criminal illegal migrants from any country. And in an extraordinary gesture never before extended by any country, he has offered to house in his jails dangerous American criminals. Oh, close quote. How about that? We need more friends like the president of El Salvador. All right. Philip J. Vandervoort III, always your friend, with the social media sweep right around the corner as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Well, let's just stay with mornings right now, Olivia. Thank you very much. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III. With a social media sweep this morning at 7:26 in the morning.
Yeah, let's start off with a quick traffic check because of this bad crash. Northbound 405, Highway 169 there in Renton. One lane is open. This would be the HOV lane. It's horribly slow there. It's backed up all along Highway 167 coming up through the Kent Valley and then 405 as well. Avoid that area. It's just going to be an impossible place to get through. You're going to be better off going out to Highway 18, coming back around or going up I-5 to I-90 and then cutting back to the east side. So that's from the state DOT's social media handle on X. Elon Musk, I think just kind of hitting on what you were talking about over the last half hour or more about this USAID funding fiasco. And Elon Musk, posted a meme with a question: how many countries tax their citizens and then send money to the United States? So just looking at that from the absolute opposite perspective. So that's another one. Now, I just saw this pop up from the Los Angeles Times, but a couple of other outlets are reporting on this, including the Hollywood Reporter. Joe Biden has signed with the Hollywood Talent Agency, called CAA, Creative Artists Agency, as he kicks off his post-presidential era. And it says the Century City outside Los Angeles, California-based mega agency also reps Barack and Michelle Obama And then one former U.S. Senator, Joe Manchin, but it also represents other Democratic-leaning politicos like Susan Rice and Beto O'Rourke and many others across the aisle as part of its Speaker's Bureau.
None of these people have anything remotely interesting to say anymore.
Yeah, right.
None of them,
yeah,
except yeah. Manchin, I guess, a little.
Maybe.
Because he can talk about you know, how his party has strayed. Mm-hmm. But none of these other people, you know, Susan Rice in particular was helping to cover for Biden's cognitive decline so she wouldn't lose her power perch.
Yeah.
So these people are out of touch and in some cases just disreputable.
Yeah.
And who the hell really cares? I mean, who cares what Joe Biden says anymore? He himself won't remember what he said in about 20 minutes.
And another great Black History post, this one from The Handle, African and Black History. Mm-hmm. John Morton Finney, a Buffalo soldier who fought in World War I, earned 11 degrees, college degrees, university degrees, and practiced law until he was 106 years old, believed to be the longest practicing attorney in the United States.
And that was 11 degrees. That's when degrees were real degrees.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, born 1889, passed away in 1998. So, tremendous. Five different law degrees he received. So there's one more Black History moment is we're
now,
in Black History
Were those honorary degrees or were those different disciplines within the JD?
Just says earned 11 academic degrees,
okay,
including
well, there
five
you go.
Law degrees. So
there
it doesn't seem to be those kind of honorary things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really earn an honorary degree. It's bestowed upon you.
John Morton Finney, World War I veteran.
Speaking, thank you very much. Let's keep talking about great men. Brian Haywood is going to be joining us in a few minutes because here we go again. You see this. This is the arrogance of one-party rule. Since they control both chambers and the governor's office, the Democrats have been trying in recent years to whittle away, to reduce your rights to the initiative process. Wait until you see the latest restrictions they have in mind. It caught Brian Haywood's attention. He's going to join us, talk about it. He might even be heading down to Olympia so they can get an earful from him. As the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
TV Theme Tuesday.
The Jeffersons?
Hey, right on. Right. Philip Jane commanded a list today, and if anybody wants to text, John, what's the number again if you got a TV theme?
206-421-5757. It's 206-421-5757. I wonder if Philip J. Vandervoort III can tell our listeners what show the Jeffersons spun out of.
That's too easy. All in the Family. Neighbors to the Bunkers.
All right, fine. It's 36 minutes after 7 o'clock. But I've been waiting to talk to my friend Brian Haywood here for a while. The first is I got to thank him once again for doing everyone in the state of Washington a huge favor. No, not just by allowing us to vote on those initiatives, a majority of which prevailed last year. But because of his new media enterprise called Haywire, as in H-E-Y, haywire.org, it is a place, it's like a Drudge Report for Washington State. So you go to haywire.org and all sorts of stories that are in news outlets, print, electronic, online, etc., are listed there for you. Not just in the Seattle press, but all over Washington. And I mean, we're talking about dozens of stories. I'd do my whole show prep here from this if I wanted to. And then you scroll down and he lists more than 50 media outlets, publications, TV radio stations, online blogging sites, and prominent people in the media. Look, there's the John Carlson Show. Brian Haywood, again, I got to thank you again for doing Haywire.
So thank you for putting it out there to your audience. It's been a lot of fun putting this up.
And by the way, I just want to say for those of our listeners who are not politically right of center, Brian Haywood was thinking of you, too. Very even-handed. There are moderate, liberal, conservative, and even left-wing publications. That you got The Stranger there, along with newspapers from all over both sides of Washington State. So, again, thank you for haywire.org. There's Brandy Cruz's YouTube podcast. I mean, it's all there. So this is really...
The other thing we're doing that's a little bit different on Haywire than was Drudge is Twitter has become a source of breaking news. And so not just anybody's opinion necessarily, but sometimes there's links on there that you can't find anywhere in the media. Mm-hmm. And when it makes sense, we'll link to you know, prominent Twitter newsbreakers.
So if you want to see what's up there now, go there, and you'll see in-depth coverage on all sorts of things. And they refresh the site periodically to put in fresh content and keep it very relevant. So that's haywire.com. .org. Okay. But that's not the only reason I wanted to bring you aboard, Ryan Haywood. You know that.
Okay. Yes.
And this
legislation is in session, so bad things are happening.
Well, yes, bad things are happening. And what we are seeing is truly the arrogance of one party rule, where they have comfortable majorities in the House and Senate. And so the initiative process, which was born during the populist era in the 1920s or the late teens, is there for the people to provide the ultimate check and balance on a runaway government. And, you know, with one-party rule firmly ensconced for the time being in Olympia, the Democrats are finding the initiative process kind of annoying, kind of irritating. And so for years, they have been trying to whittle away and restrict access to the initiative process. And now they're going all out and basically declaring war on the initiative process, even though their proposed solution can't cite the problem that they're trying to solve, Brian Haywood.
That's right. I think this is a tactic that's very skillful on their part. They lay something out and they make it sound like, well, this is just for transparency and accountability, and they try to make it seem like it's solving a problem that it's not. In the meantime, what they've designed into it is little barbs that would effectively destroy. It would make it almost impossible to do all the accounting, and there would be so much loss in the way they've set this up.
Well, one example of what is in this bill, by the way, this is Senate Bill 5382. It is sponsored by a Seattle Democrat, of course, Senator Javier Valdez. And when you are gathering signatures, whether you're a paid signature gatherer or volunteer, you are supposed to fill out who you are. The petition, the signature gatherer, on the back of the petition. You sign, you know, who you are and your address and where you're from. And then you have to attest that every person who signed the petition is a valid voter. Now, it's impossible to enforce that, but anyway, that is one of the things that the law requires. But this bill would say if someone doesn't sign the back of the petition that they were gathering signatures, then the Secretary of State has to reject the entire petition, and all the people who signed that initiative, their signatures will not count. This is clearly... designed to find ways to say gotcha and disqualify valid signatures, Brian Haywood.
Well, then they did a second thing with that. So the signature gatherer, first that first part is almost impossible. I've been at meetings where we had 20 or 30 clipboards out there, and we just let everybody, you have big, long lines. You're trying to reduce the lines, make it just as quick as possible for people. So maybe you have 20 or 30 clipboards. No one is manning the clipboard. People are just coming up and signing it.
Yeah. I've done that myself. Yeah.
So who's going to be responsible for that? Is the chain of custody is a problem. But they went a step further because they said, now we're going to introduce this thing called false swearing. If you sign on the back, if you're a petition gatherer, and you say, yeah, I checked everybody on here is a relevant voter, you can be fined under the penalty of false swearing. And I looked that up, and the penalty of false swearing is up to 364 days in jail or $5,000 fine, and it's a misdemeanor. So now I'm going to threaten you could be out gathering signatures, and if someone, if you don't check their registration almost, I mean, that's what it's asking you to do, which is almost impossible. Or it'll be so offensive that people will be like, no, that's none of your business.
Well, then, wait a minute. Isn't that part of the signature verification process?
That's the big second piece. Like you started out with, they're fixing a problem that doesn't exist. The Secretary of State already says, when you collect signatures, we strongly recommend you collect not the 327,000 that's required, but 400,000, because there will be ones that don't match, and then we'll verify them.
So people need to know that even though this isn't a problem, I mean, all the initiatives that qualified, that Brian Haywood qualified, all seven of them, the last one with our friends at the Building Industry Association of Washington, Greg Lane there doing a great job on the natural gas initiative. But that initiative that Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington helped to champion, and the six others that Brian and Let's Go Washington took full responsibility for getting on the ballot, there wasn't a single allegation of forgery or of people falsely, being caught, signing it and a petition more than once or whatnot. And so they can't cite any examples of the problem they are trying to solve. They're just looking for an excuse to throw away petitions with valid signatures.
They've added another piece to it also this time, and it's just a small piece, and I guess it can get caught up in interpretation, but included in this new bill is the requirement that the Secretary of State validate the address. And now, don't they have to do that already? They did, but there was this caveat that, if you're doing an initiative to the legislature, it's 6-7 months, people can move. And so there was a sort of an understanding that people would put their address on their signature, but the signature sort of mattered more. And there was a directive that the Secretary of State was to decide favorably and, not to make it overly restrictive. And what they tried to do here is make it overly restrictive. So if someone signed and they live in where they live in Seattle now and they move out to Bonnie Lake, this would, under this new law, that would invalidate their signature, even if they're still a registered voter, they've just moved. And even if the signature was validated.
So this is what they are up against. Brian Haywood, I heard a rumor that you might be going to testify on this bill.
I'm planning to go down there today. Just there's no end to what they're doing. So, yes, I will be heading down to Olympia today.
Now, that's today, 1:30?
1:30, yes.
1:30, the bill is 5382. 5382 is a raid on the initiative process. You want to call the legislative hotline, which opens in 12 minutes. And in a moment. I'll give you more details on that. And you want to tell them, vote no. I want my senator, I want my House members, vote no on Senate Bill 5382. If you can, Brian, can you join us tomorrow to give us an on-the-scene report about what the hearing was like later this afternoon?
I'd be happy to do that.
Beautiful. Philip Jay will make sure. Yeah?
Oh, I was going to say, we'd love to have people. I thank you for mentioning to have people call in. They can also send an email in, and those numbers really, really matter. There was a bill that just got scuttled. There was a really terrible Second Amendment offense bill that it looks like has been scuttled. It's been pulled because they got like 8,000 no votes on it in committee.
Wow.
And if your listeners can call in or even email in, there's on the site.
Yes, the legislative hotline, what they do is they send the email. You call the legislative hotline, and they send the email to the House and Senate members. It's a great, great service. And you're attesting to, hey, people pay attention to this stuff. So, Brian Haywood, we look forward to talking to you again tomorrow. Thanks again for all you're doing. And, folks, you can always check out the news at haywire.org. That's haywire.org. Thanks, Brian. It's coming up on 7:50, 10 minutes to 8 o'clock. All right. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, that bill that is nothing less than an attempt to raid and harass the initiative process. That bill is Senate Bill SB 5382. You can call in a couple of minutes, 5 minutes, you can call the legislative hotline at 800-562-6000. That's 800-562-6000. And tell them that you want your representatives and your senator to vote no on 5382. That's SB 5382. Vote no. You don't have to know the names of your House or Senate members. As when you tell them where you're from, they'll be able to tell you. And say you want email messages sent to them, and they will do that. They're great there at the legislative hotline. Take advantage of it. When we come back in about 8 minutes here on The Commute with Carlson, we'll be joined by the head of the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, who's going to tell all of you why you should need to get a permit before you are allowed to purchase a firearm. Straight ahead. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number three already. Hour number three, The John Carlson Show. It is 3 minutes after 8 o'clock. And let's keep it local here on The Commute. In Olympia, there is a suite of proposals to reduce gun violence that have been put forward by the Alliance for Gun Responsibility. They've been around for about 10 years, headed by Renee Hopkins, who used to head the Seattle Police Foundation. And in a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to Renee about one of her proposals that's caught a lot of attention and engendered some controversy. That bill, which is House Bill 1163, Senate Bill 5140, would require you to get a permit to purchase a firearm in Washington State. Here's a quick overview from Como 4's Joel Moreno.
One bill getting attention would impose a permit-to-purchase system for firearm sales. Applicants would need to submit fingerprints, show proof of firearms training, and undergo an extensive background check.
Permit-to-purchase laws are proven as one of the most effective policies that save lives and reduce gun violence.
Other bills increase secure storage requirements, limit bulk purchases, and prohibit guns in more public spaces. Opponents say criminals will ignore these safety measures.
Criminals don't go through background checks. They don't bother with bulk purchase limitations. They don't bother with one gun a month laws.
Joel Moreno, Como News.
Okay. So let's bring Renee Hopkins from the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, CEO, on the John Carlson Show this morning. Renee, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for bringing up the Police Foundation. I don't know if you're still on the board or not. But
I am still on the board. I paths just narrowly did not cross because you had just left the foundation, I think, when I joined.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was to take this position as CEO of the Alliance for Gun Responsibility.
It sure was.
So let me pay you a compliment before I ask you a critical question, okay? The Alliance for Gun Responsibility has been very successful. I mean, you've got a grassroots organization, you've got an advocacy arm, you've got, you know, lobbying, you've got a political arm, and then, you know, educational agenda. You always have a series of proactive measures to reduce gun violence, and you get a good portion of them through, either through the legislative process, sometimes even by initiative. So here comes That's the correct. Critical question. You've met with a great deal of success to reduce gun violence, and yet, in the 10 years you've been in business, gun violence in Washington hasn't gone down. It's gone up by rather a lot. Why isn't your agenda bringing down gun violence? Why is gun violence still growing despite the success of your agenda?
It's a fair question, and what I will push back on is some types of gun violence have gone down in Washington State in the last 10 years, especially suicide, which suicide by firearm takes far more lives than any other kind of gun violence in the country, and in Washington State, we've typically been about 10% higher in suicide by firearm, and over the last 3 to 4 years, our suicide rate in Washington State has gone down by 6%, while nationally it's gone up by 10%. So that's dozens of lives that have, always hard to prove a negative, but that have not been lost due to gun suicide. That being said, homicide rates have gone up nationwide, especially during the pandemic. We saw a huge spike in gun sales, a huge spike in gun violence. And in particular, in homicides, which is two of our bills this year really aim to get at the interpersonal violence, community violence that happens primarily with trafficked and illegal firearms. So happy to dig into that more, but just wanted to clarify and give a little more nuance to where our state actually is in terms of gun violence and the impact that we have had.
Yeah.
The other thing that I will say is that, you know, gun violence is a public health epidemic. It is going to take numerous different initiatives, whether they be new laws, public education, you know, rural organizing with people who own firearms, and this is how I grew up, who really think that they are owning firearms in a responsible way but are putting their families at risk. Which is in no way, shape, or form to shame anyone for owning firearms. It's about educating and really understanding how to mitigate the risks if you do decide to own firearms.
Do you own a firearm?
I do not, no, but I grew up in a family with firearms aplenty. I've shot firearms many times, gone hunting with my grandfather and uncles. And I also lost a brother to gun violence when I was young, and he was 14. So I definitely run the spectrum of experience with firearms.
Okay. And to also clarify for our listeners, about two-thirds of firearm deaths are suicide.
Correct.
So that is a major problem, and that's actually where you see some common cause between the gun rights community and the anti-gun community. They often come together.
Let's be clear about this, because I think there's a lot. I think our politicians tend to make this a more divisive issue than real people make it. I mean, I sit on panel after panel with people that would classify themselves as gun rights advocates, and there's more common ground than there's not. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows that plays out in how we see voting happening in our state. Our statewide initiatives have won at the ballot, which included closing background check loopholes, extremist protection orders and regulations on semi-automatic assault rifles.
Okay.
And they all passed with more than 60% of the vote at the ballot. So we, you know, I think, again, politicians like to make this a very black and white issue, and normal people, gun owners or not, don't see it that way.
Okay. But again, to get to the core point I was raising a moment ago, your agenda has been, you've gotten much of your agenda through, but gun violence at the hands of criminals, you know, criminal violence, homicides, they're not going down. They're going up by rather a lot. We actually set a record in 2023. I haven't seen the 24 numbers yet, for homicides in Washington. A lot of them by guns. An epidemic of youth violence with firearms. And so that continues, you know, to elude the Alliance for Gun Responsibility. Why do you think that is?
I would not put it that way. I would say that laws that are passed take years to implement effectively. And this kind of change with a public health epidemic takes time. It's not something that's going to turn on a dime, if you will.
Well, violent crime went down in a big hurry in the early 90s after we passed Three Strikes, You're Out. I was there for that one. And violent crime started going down in the first 2 years. And within 3 years, it went down 40%.
Yeah. And violent crime is going down nationwide. And we anticipate that Washington will also continue with that trend. I think two laws that we're looking at passing this year really get at what you're talking to, John, which is the easy accessibility of firearms to youth. Every firearm in our country starts out legal, and there are things along the way that make it easier for them to become illegal and fall into the wrong hands. Okay. And our permit to purchase law, which, you know, more than 68% of Washington voters favor, is really connected to lowering the kind of violence that you're talking about.
Well, I'll tell you, I want to talk about that in just a moment, but I want to hone in on what you were just saying about youth gun violence, young people shooting and killing other young people. Listen to this from Michelle Esteban from Como 4. She's talking about what the penalties are if you are a juvenile, even a juvenile with a criminal record who's caught with an illegal firearm.
If I'm a kid and I'm busted for having a firearm, which is a felony, mm-hmm. the first time, what's going to happen?
If you're a juvenile and you are caught carrying a firearm, the very first time, the most you will see is 30 days in detention. At the local level.
What happens about the second time?
The most you will receive is 30 days at the local level.
Third time?
30 days at the local level.
Fourth time?
30 days at the local level.
Fifth time?
You might then be eligible for juvenile rehabilitation for a longer sentence.
Okay. Four times where the most you can get, and you hardly ever do, is 30 days. Why aren't you focusing on that?
Well, we're focusing on making sure that the guns don't get in the hands of the kids to begin with.
Yeah, but and when they do and they're caught, there's no penalty. It's like you can have a gun, illegally possess a gun if you're a juvenile, even if you have a criminal record, but there's no real consequence until you start pulling the trigger. Don't you think we should try and stigmatize the possession of a firearm by a young person who is not eligible to own or carry one? Shouldn't we say have a penalty that is so clear and so unequivocal that they say, "Hey, stay away from guns. They don't mess around if they catch you with guns."
So I think, again, back to what our organization from a public health lens is focused on is keeping the guns out of the kids' hands to begin with. And this year, we have two bills that are really aiming at that, that have proven efficacy in other states. And that's permit to purchase and enhanced dealer licensing. And I think that's really where I would like to focus the rest of this conversation. Connecticut saw a 28% decrease in firearm homicide and a 32% decrease in firearm suicide after they enacted a permit to purchase law. Okay. And in a study done by Johns Hopkins, if we had enacted that same law in our state at the same time, which is about 10 years ago, we would have seen about 1,200 fewer gun deaths.
So here's where I think
it's really important to understand that the answers to this very, very complicated question are not singular. They include laws. They include public education. They include really working with gun owners and understanding the sort of push behind the desire to own firearms and helping people really understand how to mitigate risk.
So
and I think that is really important.
Okay, so here's the Washington State Constitution, Article 1, Section 24. You've heard it many times before, but for our listeners who haven't.
I don't know that you need to read it again,
For our listeners, the right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired. Now that is
not just a state constitutional right.
Wait, it's not just a federal constitutional right. It's a state constitutional right. And
our organization is very respectful of that. We both at the national level and state level in our country have a ripe history of balancing rights and responsibilities.
So here's my question then. Can you tell me, Renee, again, my guest, Renee Hopkins, the Alliance for Gun Responsibility, can you name me a constitutional right that you have to get a permit to exercise?
I can name you constitutional rights that there are direct responsibilities and there are limits put on, including the First Amendment.
Sure, but can you name one with a government that requires, for instance, if I want to drive, I need a permit, right? I need a license. If I want to go hunting, fishing, I got to get a license. Because those things are not constitutional rights.
It sounds like you've been talking to Alan a bit.
Alan? Alan who?
Listen, Alan Gottlieb.
Again, can you name me any constitutional right where you need the government's permission before you exercise it?
We have a right to life in our country, and with that means that other responsibilities on other rights are going to be necessary. And the bottom line is, when we talk about gun violence in our country, it is the leading cause of death for children, and anyone that feels okay with that, I question. I think it's really, really important that we think about this not as a gun issue, but as a public health issue and a right to life issue, and a right to life issue for our children. And that is going to take myriad responses to ensure that we can attack this as a public health crisis that it is.
Well, and I hope
my organization is focused on, we work with survivors of gun violence every day, again, myself included, and the loss of life that we are experiencing in our country does not have to be what it is today.
By the way, I think the leading cause of death among children is household accidents and then drowning.
No, it's firearms, John. It has been for the last 2 years.
And again, that, you know, taking that into account, because as a gun owner myself, you bet we were very, very cautious and very safety oriented when it came to our kids, and people should be showing extreme. But the bottom line here is I can't think of a constitutional right where you need to get a permit to exercise the right as a citizen. And so I don't know how this is going to pass constitutional muster. Even, you know, we have a very liberally inclined state Supreme Court.
But even with a federal court,
I can't see how a federal court would say that the government can require you to get its permission before you exercise a constitutional right. And I'm going to give you the final word, and you can tell people more about the alliance while you're answering that.
Yeah, well, to answer that question directly, 10 other states already have laws like this. They've been upheld through federal and state courts, and we don't put anything forward that we don't believe can withstand any sort of legal challenge. So we're very, very clear on that. And I just want to end by saying thank you for taking the time to talk with me today. And to me, this issue is about saving lives and nothing else. And doing that in a way that balances rights and responsibilities, which is how the Alliance has always operated. But really, when it comes down to it, the most important thing is making sure that America doesn't continue having gun violence as the leading cause of death for its children and teens, and that we know that there are things that we can do to reduce gun violence. And what that really means is saving lives, and that is what I'm about.
Okay, let us hope that that you and I can together go to Olympia next year and say it's time to have much clearer consequences for people who illegally possess a gun or illegally obtain a gun, whether they're adults or juvenile. We need to have much clearer penalties for that. Okay.
And I thought you were giving me the last word. Let's hope we can go together to Olympia and you can also help us advocate for laws that we know will help prevent those incidents from happening even in the beginning.
All right. Renee Hopkins.
Thank you for your time.
From the Alliance for Gun Responsibility. Look forward to talking again sometime, Renee.
Thanks, John.
Bye. You bet. It is 8:22 on the Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists on the commute. Oh, boy. Here we go. For years, data showed that Subaru was the most popular car in the Seattle area in terms of compared with the national average. It's been dethroned.
Uh-oh.
By Tesla.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Ah, I love in the Seattle area, the car that is more popular here than the national average is Tesla. Oh, I can't wait to call all my Democrat friends.
And how many of those owners have buyer's remorse now? Why did I buy a Tesla from Elon Musk?
Anyway, what do you got going, Philip J? Social media from socialists, which definitely do not include Elon Musk.
Yeah, let's continue along on these conversations about the USAID, Agency for International Development fiasco that's occupying Democrats and the Trump administration right now. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. A squad member in Congress, Minnesota Congresswoman from Minneapolis, Ilhan Omar. Here's what she had to say about what is happening with USAID and trying to claw back some of this money that goes to really, it seems like, push a lot of political agendas and not really a lot of national security interests or national interests. Here's the Congresswoman.
It is really, really a sad day in America. We are witnessing a constitutional crisis. We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are. This is what the beginning of dictatorship looks like. When you gut the Constitution and you install yourself as the sole power, that is how dictators are made.
So you take away money from Democrats to give away as they would prefer for their agenda. Boy, do they get upset.
Yes. Because they think you're taking their money. Actually, they're trying to take your money.
Yeah, that is.
So they've got it backwards. And by the way,
two sides to every story, right?
Again, yeah. President Trump has done nothing illegal. Neither has Elon Musk, who is assigned and has the president's authority to carry this out. the president has 45 days to notify Congress that he's impounded these funds and what he would rather spend them on. And so that is going to give them some time to carry out an audit, which this agency, USAID, has been resisting. So, carry on, Elon. You're infuriating just the right people. You're infuriating the people you want to infuriate. All right. You are listening to the radio program of record, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Man, it's a busy show. We do want to let you know, if you haven't made your weekend plans, about how you might want to spend your Saturday morning. Stay tuned. Tell you all about it coming right up.
Remember 5 years ago today involving this band, a headline, John? Anything come to mind with ABBA?
Oh, yeah.
Or Phil?
No.
Bjorn got a letter from an American and British consortium saying, we want you guys to reunite. We've got a figure. We'll write it down on a piece of paper. Go back to the other three and see if you go for it. So Bjorn went to the other three. They sat down. They looked at the money being offered and said, I can't believe we're saying no, but it's not for us. The offer? To reunite ABBA. $1 billion for one performance.
And they said no?
And they said no.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What would you do?
I think I would. What would I do? I would have said yes. Oh, it is 23 minutes to 9 o'clock. Now, I don't know if you've made plans for this weekend or not, but I know of a really great idea. Wonderful way for you to head in toward Valentine's Day. And that is to participate in the 6th annual Alexander's Hope Valentine's Day Dash. You know, I've been a part of this now since it got underway. It's not very long, just 5K. It's about 3 miles. You can run, you can walk, you could do a little bit of both. Bring your family, bring your pets. And they got a brand new location. This year they're doing it in Bellevue. And it's a really great cause, and you're going to find out why here if you don't recall. Alexander's Hope. Want to talk with Bella Chafee, who has made this charity happen, has made the Alexander's Hope Valentine's Day Dash a reality. She joins us this morning for a couple of minutes on the commute. How are you, Bella?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Great. All right. You've got the 6th annual Alexander's Hope Valentine's Day Dash. You moved it to Bellevue this year. How did that happen? You're moving up in the world. I love it.
I know. We were wanting a location that would hopefully attract some more crowds and allow us to grow the race. And so Bellevue Park was what we landed on.
Well, I think it's a great place to do this. All profits from the Valentine's Day Dash support helping to fund the Nick of Time life-saving youth heart screenings and teaching young people CPR and how to operate an AED, shock someone back to life. And there's a reason for that, because you almost lost your brother.
Yes. Yes, we did. My brother, Alexander, had an undiagnosed and then misdiagnosed heart condition, which ultimately led to him needing to get a heart transplant at 19.
And it arose in a very uncomfortable situation. He basically dropped dead and had to be brought back. And as Bella is saying, he didn't need heart surgery. He needed a whole new heart, and it had been misdiagnosed. So what they do with Alexander's Hope is a twofer. They help get heart screenings for young people who normally don't get them, because how often do young people get heart attacks? And the second thing they do is they teach young people CPR and how to operate an AED so they can help others who suffer heart attacks. Right, Bella?
Yes. Yes, we have. We partner with the Nick of Time Foundation. They've been doing this for a long time. They actually recently celebrated their 30,000th heart screened, which was incredible.
Nice.
We actually have a screening with them tomorrow at Mount Si High School, weather permitting, which might be the biggest screening in history so far, which will be really exciting.
Great, great. And so how do people, you know, donate? How do they raise money for the Valentine's Day Dash? How does that work?
Yeah, so for the Valentine's Day Dash, we have donations on, we can accept donations on our website, alexandershope.org, or through, if you want to, if you're able to sign up for the race this weekend, when you're going to check out, you can submit a donation through the race sign-up page as well.
Okay, well, that sounds, again, sounds wonderful. It's always fun, rain or shine. And so it starts this Saturday, February 8th, this Saturday at 9 a.m.?
Yes, 9 a.m. at Bellevue Park. Just before the race at 8:45, we'll have a free kids dash for those 5 and under. So just a really small loop to get the morning started. And then the 5K will start at 9.
Okay. And again, you could do any or all of it. You can do it with your family members. You can do it with your dogs. It's, again, Bellevue Downtown Park. It's just immediately south of Bellevue Square. Can't miss it. And it's going to be a lot of fun. You give away a lot of swag, and you've got treats and eats for people as well. So you make it really comfortable for people to have a good time, Bella.
Yes, thank you so much. All sorts of stuff. We have some really awesome sponsors this year, some great giveaways and prizes. And then, of course, everybody, every participant will receive a long sleeve T-shirt, and finishers will each get a medal.
Now, how much does it cost to buy in?
Right now, it's $40, or this will stand true till the day of the race, $40 for most people, $30 for youths 10 and under.
Okay. And again, it's really just a donation.
Yeah. Yeah, it really just helps us be able to offset the cost to put this on for the community, share about what Alexander's Hope and Nick of Time Foundation does, and then raise money to go back towards the heart screenings.
So, again, I really love this. You know, here, Bella and her wonderful folks almost lost her baby brother. And instead of saying, well, man, that was a close call, and life goes on, she said, hey, wait a minute. What about other kids who might be in a situation like this? And what are we doing to help kids learn CPR so they can help anyone who has a heart attack or operate one of these AED machines that they have in more and more places so you can bring someone back if they are in cardiac distress? I love the fact that you're thinking of ways to help others, and you have probably saved some lives here doing that, Bella.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a really cool cause to be able to support and see the lives that you're directly impacting every month at the heart screening.
So anyway, I'm going to be there. I think it's terrific. You know, put me down for $100. And well, Lisa's going to go too. Put us down for $200. and so we are looking forward to playing a part in making this a successful fundraiser. Again, it's the 6th annual Alexander's Hope Valentine's Day Dash. It's in Bellevue Park, 9 a.m. Plenty of open, available, ample, free parking. Okay, this is Bellevue, not Seattle. Plenty of free parking in and around Bellevue Park. And again, thank you for what you're doing. And I really want to encourage KVI listeners to check it out. And if you want to get more information, again, you can just show up at any time between 8:30 and 9 at Bellevue Park, just south of Bellevue Square. You can also check out the website, and that's alexandershope.org. Do I have that right, Bella?
Yes, that is correct. And you'll see, you'll learn all about us there, and you'll see a tab up top that says Valentine's Day Dash that will give you everything you need to know about the race.
AlexandersHope.org. One more time, AlexandersHope, H-O-P-E, .org. Okay. Bella Chafee, thanks ever so much for joining me. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me on and sharing about the race. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you on Saturday.
Okay, you got it. That is, again, Bella Chafee. The Chafees are such a wonderful family, and this is such a wonderful charity. Again, AlexandersHope.org. Looking forward to seeing you this Saturday. Let's get to our phones now. We've got from Issaquah. Scott is calling the Commute with Carlson this morning. Go for it, Scott.
Morning, John. I was sitting here playing my video game, getting ready to go to work, and then I heard you guys talk about guns.
Yes.
I had three quick points I want to make, and it's kind of repetitive points been making them over the years. But first of all, it says shall not be infringed. That's pretty clear. That's just straightforward. And then these people say they believe in this right to life. Well, but then why do they prosecute people who defend themselves using a firearm? And why do they take away your ability to use a firearm? And then basically tell criminals they won't be prosecuted when they try to hurt somebody by doing so. And then you have the third scenario where, okay, back in the 1970s, I don't know if these Democrats remember, but in this country, you still allowed to own machine guns, all kinds of stuff. You had grenades. And nobody had mass shootings. We didn't have people killing each other all the time like this, okay? It was the Democrats that removed all the basically have – decriminalize our laws. They won't enforce. They won't have punishment. They won't teach children respect. They won't use discipline. So basically, it's not weapons. You could use any weapon. You could be a car. You can run people over. You can move people down.
We saw that in New Orleans. Yeah. And people didn't talk about car violence.
And then we had
the terrible stabbings, and you didn't hear people talk about knife violence. But when there are shootings, you always hear about gun violence because it defaults to their ideological hostility to people being allowed to own a firearm.
Right, and it shouldn't matter because it's not these objects that are causing the crimes. It's these people's attitude. It's a behavioral science problem is what it is, and people need to be punished and disciplined. That's what it is. When we used to enforce the laws in this country, we didn't have all these issues, not at this rate that we did, and we didn't have all these drug use. We didn't promote gang violence. I mean, now people worship gangs. They think gangs are great, All this they promote all these evil things on the internet.
Well, the most interesting part of my conversation with Renee, and she knows where I am politically, and so she still came on the show, and I really appreciate her doing that. But did you catch when I said, four times you can be convicted as a juvenile of illegally possessing a firearm, four times, and there's next to no penalty? Why aren't you addressing that? And there was this long pause. And again, I don't know why they don't. If they want to stop gun violence, one way of doing that is going after violent young people who have guns. And so, again, I'm not suggesting it's a singular cure, and that's all you have to do. I'm just wondering why they're going out of their way not to do it when they're doing all these other things. So, again, until we get serious about consequences for young people illegally obtaining and possessing guns, we will continue to have these unnecessary stories about gun violence, which is increasingly random and is increasing in number. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson. You got 49 minutes now after 8 o'clock, 11 minutes to 9 on The John Carlson Show. Good morning. Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, rounding out the program, we had Brian Haywood joining us earlier, the man who gave us seven initiatives to vote on. The legislature hastily voted three of them into law because they didn't want them on the ballot. Now they're trying to renege on at least one of them. And the other went before the voters, the other three. In all, four became law. Three did not. The legislature reacts to this by trying to restrict access to the initiative process and trying to make it easier to disqualify petitions. That bill is 5382. Again, the whole purpose of it is they say, oh, we're concerned about forgeries. They can't come up with any forgeries. They haven't shown any evidence that this has happened. They're just simply trying to make it easier to toss entire initiative petitions. That is what 5382 will do. It is sponsored by Seattle a Democrat named Javier Valdez. And so you can join Brian Haywood, who's going down there to testify today, in opposing this bill. You can't make it down to Olympia. I understand. You just need to make a phone call. You can do it right now to the legislative hotline. That's 800-562-6000. And they're very pleasant. They're very helpful. And just tell the operators, I want my House and Senate members to oppose Senate Bill 5382 or oppose SB 5382. Call them at 800-562-6000. You don't have to have the name of your legislator because when you tell them where you're from, they can tell you who your legislators are. Just say you want your legislators opposing SB 5382. Call again, 800-562-6000. And let's talk again tomorrow. One of the things we'll talk about is what happened at this hearing this afternoon.